This is The Guardian.
Did you pay for the suit that you're wearing this morning?
I did. The suit is from Hobbs and I bought it and I will be wearing it for my conference speech this afternoon.
I'll be honest, it was a hard one to turn down. I appreciate there was big demand for the tickets. One of my children was keen to go along.
I like the idea of a guy in charge of an organisation who makes his female chief of staff get paid more than him. That's quite a good look. I quite like that.
I've got people stopping me and speaking to me in workplaces and high streets saying, what are Labour doing? It's almost jaw-dropping.
I'm Pippa Carrera.
And I'm Kieran Stacey.
You're listening to Politics Weekly Westminster for The Guardian. We're here in the press room. You can probably hear the noise in the background of the Labour Party conference in Liverpool. And it's the first party conference, as every single Labour MP and minister I bumped into has reminded me, with Labour in power for 15 years, in fact. So a big moment. And in about half an hour, Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, is going to take to the main stage for her speech. When I arrived in the press room a wee while ago, the queue was snaking right round the conference centre, so she's obviously going to be one of the big draws of the day. But first of all, Kieran, what's the mood so far here? What are you picking up? Is everyone really excited and cracking open bottles of champagne? Because, as I said, it's a very historic moment, isn't it?
Yeah, they should be, shouldn't they? It's not quite that. It's a strange atmosphere, I would say, at this conference. It should be all about celebrations. Lib Dem conference last week was just full of people celebrating, from what we're told. This one should be the same, but it's not quite. There's a few grumbles around, I would say, whether it's, you know, annoyance about the winter fuel allowance decision, frustration about how Number 10 is handling stories on donations and gifts, or a kind of almost dread, I think, about the economic decisions that are to come. To a certain extent, the tone is always set by the party leader, isn't it? And Keir Starmer is not one for celebrations and joy. So I think that is filtering down to the party masses.
Although I think we're going to hear a sort of a, I'm not sure to be a smooth change of tone or whether it be more like a clunky gear shift in an old manual car. But having had nothing but sort of that downbeat doom and gloom since the speech in the Downing Street Garden at the end of August, we've been warned that there's more tough choices to come in the budget. We're being told that with a flatlining economy, there's no great hope for anything to be changed, to be improved immediately. It feels like, and certainly what we're picking up, is that that both from Rachel Reeves and from Keir Starmer, we're going to hear a little bit more about the bigger picture. And instead of just talking about the inheritance from the Conservatives, obviously they say they have a £22 billion in-year black hole, which has made some really difficult decisions, that winter fuel you mentioned and various other things, that instead of just talking about the Tory inheritance, that's kind of like stage one. And stage two now is going to be say to people, look, it is going to be painful and there are tough decisions, but it's going to be worth it. And here's why. And there's been a lot of criticism of them over the last few weeks for concentrating on the former and not really giving enough emphasis on the latter. And, you know, I've been picking it up among really quite senior ministers at conference. One said the other day that they admitted that these things were always about getting the right balance between light and shade, and they felt that actually the shade bit of it they'd been too heavy with. And I think finally that's the conclusion that Downing Street has come to, and we're probably going to hear more from that from Reeves in her speech.
Yeah, well, the front pages of the newspapers today, I think Labour will be delighted at, because it was largely that message, wasn't it? You know, Reeves offers a bit of hope. And I think the core message was probably the correct one, which is you can only build on solid economic foundations. I say correct just in terms of Labour strategy and Labour communications rather than, you know, that's not a political judgment. But if that's what they want to do, yes, that's the message they have to send. You've got to fix the foundations first and then you build, but you have to also say what you're building. I think the problem is at the moment, and we'll see what Reeves says in half an hour, but it's very broad brush. I still don't have a sense of what they want to do once they've, you know, quote unquote, fix the foundations. What does it look like? You know, what do they want to do with the NHS? How much privatisation will there be? What do they want to do on housing? How many social homes are they going to build? How are they going to fund that? You know, what will Britain look like in 4 or 5 years' time? I still, although we're hearing the words optimism and, you know, better things to come, what is it?
So over the last 48 hours, I've obviously spoken to actually probably about a dozen cabinet ministers now. And there's definitely a degree of frustration that Downing Street hasn't been doing that other bit of the picture, like telling the story almost of what the government looks like and wants to do, the narrative bit, and a lot of soul searching about why that is the case. And it's been quite striking from Downing Street, though, people I talked to in there, that suddenly they're all saying, well, look, you know, there are actually big things that we've already done. You know, we brought in the National Planning Policy Framework.
Sure.
We are setting up GB Energy, and, you know, sort of four or five other quite fundamental shifts. The issue is that none of those things are tangible to your average man or woman in the street. And they may well, in 5 or 10 or more years' time, make a substantial difference to kind of like the economic structures in this country. But right now, they don't, you know, they just sound like something that politicians are talking about. They don't actually mean anything. And equally, the first steps, which are much more tangible, so things like, you know, 6,000 more teachers in schools, bringing down waiting lists by a certain amount, setting up a border command, and are much more sort of directly relevant to people's lives. We've not really heard anything about that. So I wonder whether they'll start to come back now to some of those much more immediate improvements so they can say to people, look, you asked for change, and the slogan of this conference is Change Begins. They obviously realise that they're having to start to answer that question. But we still don't have that big picture. As I keep getting told, Keir Starmer doesn't like the V word, vision.
One thing that I found really interesting yesterday, I was talking to somebody who's quite close to Starmer and used to work directly with him. He said, you know, the thing is, these were his words, Keir doesn't do policy. And I thought, well, that was an interesting thing. I've heard this, you know, Starmer doesn't do vision thing, but I've not heard people saying he doesn't do policy. And so I kind of asked this person what they meant, and they said that he's managerial, and he likes to fix problems, and he likes to find solutions. But actually coming up with policies that are going to, you know, shift how this country is run, he doesn't really do it. And I think it's one of the reasons, and this person said the same thing, one of the reasons that Sue Gray has become quite important in Downing Street is because, ironically, even though she's the advisor, she does do policy. And she's interested in policy, you know, from what I'm told, in a way that Starmer isn't always. And she does detail in those policies, and he's not so interested in that.
We'll come on to Sue Gray in a bit more detail later, but back to Rachel Reeves for a moment. You know, she said that she's never felt more optimistic. I'm not sure that's necessarily a viewpoint which is actually shared by anyone in government, at the top of government, until about, you know, 5 minutes ago.
Well, that might be true for Rachel Reeves as well.
Well, yes,
Rachel Reeves feeling as optimistic as ever is a low bar.
But it feels quite a clunky gear change, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it's asking quite a lot of the public to expect them to be told, almost to exclusion of anything else, that everything's terrible, and then for them to be told, actually, you know, there's great hope for the future. And I do wonder whether, as a government, or certainly as a Treasury, which is so sensitive to the markets and to business response and so on, whether some of the warnings in the last week from people like Andy Haldane and sort of business leaders, that the government's in danger of like almost talking down the economy and sort of it being a self-fulfilling prophecy of doom and gloom, has slightly spooked them a bit and maybe them escalate their sort of, you know, move to a bit more optimism. Because we still have some tough things ahead, right? We've got like the budget, which we keep being told is going to be terribly tough. There'll be tax rises in there.
Yep.
There'll be spending cuts for some departments. So the Reeves has said there'll be no more austerity, presumably for protected departments like schools and NHS and so on. And then we've got the spending, the sort of longer term spending review next year, which will set out the government spending for the next 3 years. We still don't know what she's going to do with her fiscal rules, whether she's going to relax some of the sort of the limits on borrowing to put more into infrastructure. I mean, there's a lot we don't know, but lots of it still is set to be pretty difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the spending review, the 1 year spending review that we're going to get around the same time as the budget, is going to be a really interesting event. And I think to a certain extent, maybe we as the public haven't paid enough attention to what's about to come. Because although Rachel Reeves was on the radio this morning saying no more austerity, then when she was interrogated a little bit more about that, she said, well, there will be increases in real terms in Whitehall spending. And then, you know, she was asked, well, what about individual departments? And she said, I don't want to get into what's going to happen to individual departments. Now, what that means is there might be, let's say, a 1% above inflation rise overall on average for Whitehall departments. That's what was baked in by the Conservatives before they left government. That, assuming that you're protecting departments such as defence and health and probably schools, means massive cuts to other departments, including things like the court service, immigration service, local government funding.
Yeah, all of which are already under huge pressure.
So I think the problem will be is if she's out there now saying there will be no more austerity, and then in a month or two's time, suddenly we're faced with sweeping cuts to quite sensitive departments, then the messaging is going to have to change again.
Yeah, and it's back and forth. And before we even get onto the budget, there's still the sort of rumbling discontent around the windfall fuel payment that you mentioned, which I've been quite surprised by how many senior ministers have said, look, we've handled this really badly. Mm. Even if they can defend the decision as a way of filling that £22 billion black hole, they say we could have done it in so many different ways. We could have announced mitigations at the same time. We could have made sure that the, you know, the comms around it was more about sort of, you know, the rich don't need it, but listen, under the pension triple lot, people are going to be getting £900 more this year and £400 more next year. But we didn't really hear any of that at the time. So there's been discontent about the handling of it. But also there's a fear that, you know, we haven't even got to winter yet, right? Energy bills are going up.
Yeah.
And every year, unfortunately, sadly, there are cases of, you know, elderly people that can't afford to turn on their heating and end up in A&E, or worse, end up, sadly, dying. And, you know, that will probably happen again this year. Except the difference this time will be that everyone, the right-wing press, the Tories, and actually some within the Labour movement as well, will point the finger at the government and say, you had a choice. This was a choice. You could have made a different choice. But instead, you decided to target this group of about 2 million vulnerable people just over the threshold, the pension threshold, you know, who you could otherwise have focused elsewhere. Yes, maybe another difficult decision, but you decided to go for this group, so they will get the blame. And there's actually going to be a vote on it at conference, isn't there?
Yes. Well, the unions are kind of organising a vote. Condemning, we don't know exactly what the language will be, but broadly it's going to be condemning the winter fuel allowance cuts and calling on them to be reversed. Now, this doesn't actually bind the government in any way. It's not going to change government policy. It's certainly not going to stop that cut happening. But it would be quite embarrassing, I think, for the leadership to be defeated in its first, as you say, its first conference back in power in 15 years. You know, to be defeated on a really core policy in such a visible way.
The other thing which the government has struggled to move on from at this conference, despite its attempts to talk about the big picture and how the country's going to change over the next 5 years, is this ongoing row over donations, which has besieged some of the senior members of the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, his deputy Angela Rayner, and of course Rachel Reeves, who we've talked about. Not that they necessarily broke the rules around declarations, although they have been reported, I think Angela Rayner is the most recent to be reported by the Conservatives to the Standards Commissioner, but that actually, this was not a subject, an area, which is about whether the rules have been broken or not. It is about how it looks to the public. And not just how it looks to the public, the optics of taking freebies, whether it's holidays, Arsenal tickets, wardrobe, whatever, but how it feels to the public when they have heard from Labour over many years criticism of the Conservatives and other, you know, senior political figures within the Conservative Party for being on the take and promising that they would be different, that this was going to be like a government of service. And, you know, we've had this defence pretty much all week that, well, you know, we didn't break any rules and this is, you know, unfair targeting and, okay, so we won't take any more free clothes. But what it seems to me they're missing is that actually this one isn't about the rules and it's about the optics. And it's another example, we've had a few, of Downing Street and the operation not necessarily seeing a problem as it develops, because they think that it's frivolous or insignificant or unimportant and they want to concentrate on the big picture stuff, but actually it's damaging and they need to nip it in the bud, and they didn't do that for too long.
Well, if you in opposition have made it a big deal, you know, if you have spent years raising the salience of these issues, of ethics issues and donations and money, then don't be surprised if the public think that this is a big deal when the story's about you. And let me give you one example. So the story today in the Mail about Angela Rayner having her own personal photographer. Now, from what I understand, that's a departmental photographer who was there before Labour came into power. The problem is there's a bunch of quotes from Angela Rayner attacking exactly that happening when Rishi Sunak got that, I don't know if it was the same photographer or a different photographer, into Number 10. Very similar scenario that Labour were happy to make hay with in opposition. And, you know, for a journalist, it's just an easy story to write then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same photographer that took the vanity pic, in inverted commas, of Keir Starmer's new kitten, Prince, as well.
Yeah.
So Downing Street, the government has three photographers who are paid for by the taxpayer who go around the departments. This has been the case for some time. And the new thing here seems to be that this individual, who I've been on trips with various prime ministers, Conservative prime ministers, as well as the existing one, has moved to do specifically to focus on the deputy prime minister role and, crucially, the whole department. That it was a civil service decision, a comms decision within the Department of Communities. Isn't actually a personal vanity photographer specifically for Angie Rayner. But again, it's optics, right? It's how these things look. Angela Rayner, though, had a pretty tough couple of days at conference. Her conference agenda was pretty front-loaded. She had her speech, she had fringe meetings, and she, of course, had that interview with Laura Koonsberg on the BBC, which 20 minutes of which was spent on her holiday courtesy of Lord Ali, the Labour donor, who, incidentally, is at conference, although Sue Gray has decided to stay away.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I've been wondering how on earth she's got the energy for it. But it turns out she sleeps for just 3 hours a night. I mean, who's the only other politician I can think of that only sleeps for 3 or 4 hours a night? It was Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
So the woman has some stamina.
I did actually speak to Angela Rayner yesterday at a fringe event that I was chairing, and I asked her specifically about social housing. And she gave a really passionate, really kind of articulate and well-worded argument in favour of the government building a lot more social housing. And it was one of those moments I just thought, you know, more Labour people, senior Labour people, need to be able to communicate like this, because that was the kind of very positive vision of what they're trying to do. Now, whether she'll actually manage to do that or not, whether she'll manage to get the money from the Treasury to do that or not, I don't know. But it was really interesting to hear the words. She talked about moral mission, which is quite out of fashion in Labour thinking.
So as I say, Sue Gray isn't at conference. She's apparently getting ready for Keir Starmer's trip to the United States for the UN General Assembly. But there is a bit of a suspicion, given she's been at previous conference, she was here last year in Liverpool, that she might be laying low. And I think part of the problem is that she has become the story. And that is like a really dangerous place for advisers to be in. I mean, you remember Alistair Campbell left Downing Street after it was decided between him and Tony Blair that he had become the story. She will want to avoid that. So there seems to be, certainly of all the conversations I'm having around conference, a sort of a difference of opinion. And the cabinet and ministers seem to be quite supportive of Sue Gray, I guess because they're the ones that are working with her on a daily basis. Whereas some of the advisors are maybe a little bit less supportive and think that these, you know, the suggestions that she's hoarding things, that she's not letting stuff get through to Starmer that he needs to see, might be true. And we're trying to kind of work out, I've been trying to sort of find my way through the very subjective views to actually what is happening. And it does feel that she does need a bit of support, maybe in the form of a deputy or something like that. There's also the civil service side of things. Simon Case, the cabinet secretary, is on his way out, and there's no private secretary to the prime minister either. So there's a couple of big civil service roles still to be filled. But there's a lot of very disgruntled, as we've talked about before, disgruntled special advisers who are concerned about their salaries and the fact that then it turned out it was leaked that Sue Gray owns more the prime minister. And they will be really hoping that she doesn't continue to be the story, not least because I'm told she really hates it and, you know, gets photographers following her down the streets and stuff like that, where she's quite a private individual, but also because it's a distraction. It's a daily distraction from what the government wants to do. The sort of stuff that you're talking about social housing, the sort of stuff that we've heard from a variety of ministers, the sort of stuff that we'll hear from Rachel Reeves very, very shortly, and presumably the sort of stuff we'll hear from Keir Starmer when he gives his speech to the Labour Party conference tomorrow.
Yeah, well, Keir Starmer will get a chance to really reset the narrative. We'll get some sense of what he's going to say overnight, and then we'll see his speech tomorrow. My guess is there will be some more of this optimism. It certainly that message seems to have been heeded by the Labour leadership. And of course, it was this time last year that he was covered in glitter just before his speech, and that almost set the tone for everything that was to come. So I wonder what crazy moment we're going to get.
Well, I think he'll be hoping no crazy moment, and then just a speech which will successfully and smoothly shift the narrative a little bit more onto the future, a little bit more upbeat, a little bit more, you know, things are tough, but we've got our arms around you and we're going to reassure you and support you. But
maybe, but that glitter attack did work well for him.
Don't give people ideas, Karen.
I'm not saying it was a setup, but it did work well for him. It wasn't a setup.
And glitter, of course, is one thing that really got cut through, didn't it? Especially his reaction to it when he pulled up his sleeves, rolled up his sleeves, took off his jacket, dusted down his shoulders and carried
on.
He
dealt with it well.
And I think that the shift in tone shows that Downing Street has finally realised that some of this stuff that's been floating around, whether it's about donations, whether it's about Sue Gray, whether it's about salaries, is actually cutting through to the public.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a recognition finally from them, according to a lot of their MPs, a little bit too late, but actually that the optics of this stuff does matter, and that while you can have and should have as a government your focus on the far horizon, and you don't want to be buffeted on a day-to-day basis by events, you do need to be able to respond to them, and you do need to be in tune with the public mood. So it'd be interesting to see whether some of that is reflected, some more of that is reflected in Starmer's speech tomorrow.
Well, the polls show they've had the shortest honeymoon, I think, ever. Mm. So they read the polls in Downing Street, just as the rest of us do.
So that's all from us. We'll be back tomorrow with John Harris, straight after Keir Starmer's speech, and with more from behind the scenes of conference. Please like and follow Politics Weekly UK to get our podcasts. And if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby, music by Axel Kakutier, and the executive producer is Maz Ebtahaj. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
This is The Guardian.